Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. Your church can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 on the support page of our website, issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Download the flyer and present it to your congregation today.
I know that they'll be at my bedside when I can't move my finger anymore, and I want them to have that.
A lot of people my age like to say, I'm against abortions, I'm pro-life, but marriage is different. Well, the reason they're able to say that today is that 30 and 40 years ago, when the pro-life movement came face-to-face with Roe v. Wade, they didn't give up.
The degree to which society can trump God and tell him that he has to shut up about his law makes it more and more difficult for the church then to proclaim a word of mercy and forgiveness.
We start new to reach new, and we reposition the ordained leaders. What if we shifted them from doer and oppressor to equipper and overseer?
They pull a bait and switch on people, bring them in the door thinking they're going into a non-denom evangelical church when in fact they're in a Lutheran church. The problem with bait and switch is there's usually a lot of bait and no switch.
1 hour from now, we're going to play Issues Etc. soundbite of the week. There's a taste of the five soundbites. We've got a bonus soundbite this week because it's been a while since we played the game. Five soundbites that you'll listen to and then you'll vote for, and your vote will determine which will be Issues Etc. soundbite of the week 1 hour from now on Issues Etc. I've been reading a book recently. I read a lot, and this one I just thought I'll read about magic. A magician wrote a book. So he's writing about his career as a magician, and right in the middle of the book, it was kind of annoying. He talked about Jesus, that Jesus was a magician. And then centuries later, some people who were kind of followers of Jesus decided to embellish the legends and turn the tricks into miracles and kind of exaggerate a little bit. And that's how we got Christianity. And that's how we got the New Testament. Of course, he offered zero evidence for this, but it was his theory about Jesus, and everyone has an opinion about where the documents in the New Testament that tell us about Jesus and then later the apostles' writings, where they really came from. Are we just left to guess? Is there no history? Is there no evidence? Is there no, as you would say, kind of trail of evidence that we can follow to say where the New Testament came from? Joining us to answer that question on this Friday afternoon, Dr. Charles Geeshan. He's academic dean and professor of New Testament at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. He's authored an article for the latest For the Life of the World magazine titled, How Did We Get the New Testament? Dr. Geeshan, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Great to be with you once again.
This basic idea that I just spoke of, that there was a Jesus who was something and did some stuff, and then later, much later, maybe centuries later, others wrote about him in kind of a legendary fashion, and that's where we got the Gospels and the Epistles and the New Testament. Is there a shred of truth to that idea?
Even the best of a historian would never assert that, because even if they were a complete unbeliever, because history shows us that these documents from the first century, like, you know, hitting the send button on your computer. Once it's out there, people start forwarding it all over the place. So if you said something, it's now circulating, and it's hard to recall it, and even if you wanted to make a change. Let's say you said something you didn't want to say. It's hard to recall that, and one can say the same thing happened is in the first century, you have copies of the epistles, the Gospels, and the New Testament written and then circulating, and you couldn't later have somehow recalled them and then written all sorts of miracles into them and embellished them, because all of these things are already circulating, and people would say, well, that's not what the original said, because we have other accounts that show this. So indeed, the testimony to Jesus' divine identity, his miracles, his death, his resurrection, all of these things are grounded in first century documents from the writings of the Apostle Paul or the evangelist that were then circulated, and not from somehow later centuries where Christians wanted to somehow embellish the ministry of Jesus with the addition of miracles or other sayings.
So you're saying that in the actual documents, of which we have in some cases fragments or some entirely extant documents in abundance, mm-hmm. there's no evidence that the documents started out as, you know, early they were just Jesus the magician or Jesus the rabbi, and then later became Jesus the Messiah.
No, it would be absolutely very hard. We have a lot of 3rd and 4th century documents that are spread in a broad geographical region. And we even have some 2nd century manuscripts of some text, which is basically within less than a century from an autograph, namely the earliest editions of these letters or these gospels. And so you can, by looking at these manuscripts, you can see that there hasn't been all sorts of tampering, all sorts of, there certainly were mistakes in copying that sometimes were made, but even by comparing the various manuscripts, you can see where a mistake came in or where a small addition or change came in by a copyist. But there's a very reliable text that we have that testifies to the earliest text, namely to a first century text. And one might say because of the widespread distribution of these letters, namely it wasn't just, you know, one congregation copying one other congregation, but rather they spread in a wide way geographically across a different number of centers for Christianity, that's additional support for the kind of text that we have, the earliest text of these letters, which, you know, 2nd, 3rd, and especially 4th century manuscripts.
Let's talk a little bit about, before we get into some of the specifics of the origins and how this came together, because it didn't come together all at once. It isn't, you know, mm-hmm. golden plates handed from an angel to an apostle. It comes together right. in a very human way. But let's talk about how we have it in its final form, so to speak, the arrangement mm-hmm. of the New Testament. You say it's not necessarily chronological, and the books that come first for really a theological reason, even more than their chronological reason. What
yeah.
is that about?
Yeah, well, the thing that I think is interesting in terms of how Christians organized what we call the canon or the order of the books in the New Testament, beginning with Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, and then you have the Acts of the Apostles with followed by the epistles, is that it's not that Matthew, Mark, Luke, John are, you know, the very first documents that were written, but they're recording the ministry of Jesus, which is foundational for early Christianity. And sometimes, you know, we don't know exactly when the Gospels are written, but probably in that period of 50 to 70, sometimes people place John, the Gospel of John, a little later. It could be early, though. One can say even if you have an epistle of Paul, for example, 1st and 2nd Thessalonians being written in the early 50s, yet it's not put early in the New Testament. Why? Because the very life, ministry, teachings, and especially the testimony to the death and resurrection of Jesus are the foundational documents for early Christianity. They're put front and at the front of the canon. Even within the four Gospels, one can say Matthew is put first because of its connections with the Old Testament. There's a lot of emphasis on prophecy and fulfillment in Matthew. It begins with a significant genealogy. So as early Christians were using Matthew, one of the things that they saw very prominently was how closely tied it was to the Old Testament. And so I would argue one of the reasons it's actually the first of the four Gospels is because of that old, it's dripping with Old Testament prophecy, and it's also has that strong genealogy at the beginning, so it provides a little bit of that that glue that shows the connection between what is narrated in the Gospels and what is prophesied and foretold in the Old Testament, especially about the coming of Christ. And thus, the four Gospels, and we have evidence that the four Gospels were circulating together as testimony to Jesus already very strongly in the second century. Justin Martyr talks about the memoirs of Jesus, namely, he's referring to the four memoirs of Jesus, the Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. These Gospels then are kind of the heart and center of the proclamation of early Christianity, and so they're given the pride of place in, at the beginning of the New Testament. And then the apostles and their writings, you know, are kicked off really by Luke's second volume. If you just wanted to put Luke's writings together, it's interesting that Luke would be followed immediately by Acts, because Luke wrote a gospel and then he wrote the Acts of the Apostles. But in the canon, those two are separated. Same author, but they're separated, because you have the fourth gospel and then you have the story of early Christianity, Luke's volume 2, which is the Acts of the Apostles. And that all, I think, those five historical books then set up the various epistles. When you read the various epistles, they're even ordered sometimes by length or prominence. Like Paul wrote 1st and 2nd Thessalonians, Galatians earlier, yet they aren't first in the list of Pauline epistles. Pride of place is given to Romans because of its both its length and its doctrinal content. You know, as a kind of an extensive discussion of Paul's gospel, his proclamation. And then that's followed by some of his other longer epistles before you get to something like 1st and 2nd Thessalonians. And then the pastoral epistles, all of which are shorter, are grouped together at the end of Paul's various letters that are found in the canon. But you can see that it's not the chronology of when Paul wrote these or when the Gospels were written, but rather somewhat the content and the prominence of the writings that determines a little bit their order in canon. Interestingly, the book of Revelation comes last, not because it was the final book written in the New Testament. We aren't absolutely certain, again, of its date. It could be as early as 68, AD 68. It could be as late as towards the end of the first century. But it's put in the canon as the last book, in part because of its content, looking forward to the second coming and in its visionary and climaxing with the new heaven and the new earth. So its place in the canon is more because of its content, not because of, you know, when it was written.
Dr. Charles Geeshan is our guest. We're answering the question, how did we get the New Testament, on this Friday afternoon, October the 24th. He is academic dean and professor of New Testament at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Any former evangelicals are hearing me speak right now, I want to assure you, you don't have to be a homeless Christian. If you would go to issuesetc.org, look on their website, you'll find a list of churches. Find one close to you and attend that church. There, you can receive the true gospel, you don't have to be a homeless Christian, and they will not call you a backslider.
To find a church near you, go to issuesetc.org and click Find a Church.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7? Check out our website, issuesetc.org, and go to the Listen On Demand page. Listen at the gym, in your kitchen, in your garden, on your iPod, your computer, or in your car. The technology may be new, but the truth never changes. Issues Etc. on-demand audio available for your convenience at issuesetc.org. 10 hours of new programming each week. issuesetc.org and click Listen On Demand.
You can teach lay people theology. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. Your church can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 on the support page of our website, issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Download the flyer and present it to your congregation today.
Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, email, Google+. Simple ways that you can share Issues Etc. programs with your friends, relatives, and fellow parishioners. Just go to Listen on Demand Archives at issuesetc.org and look for the share feature images posted beneath each audio segment. You're only one click away from telling someone about Issues Etc. The Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and look for Share This.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're answering the question, where and how did we get the New Testament? Dr. Charles Geeshan is our guest. After about another 10 minutes, we'll go to Hour 2 of Issues Etc. We'll get a roundup in this week's Pop Christianity with Chris Roseborough of Fighting for the Faith. Then we'll play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. Dr. Geeshan, you said before the break that that some of the epistles are actually very early. Are they, in fact, even earlier perhaps than the Gospels?
That's possible. Yeah. Well, again, we know a little bit more exact dating of Paul's epistles than we do the individual Gospels. But most of the New Testament writings, one can say, fall between a two-decade window between 50 and 70. I would say that's that. You know, those are kind of the parameters, and it may have few, like the book of Revelation, sometimes is dated, you know, late, Gospel of John, sometimes dated late, but even those two could fall into that window. I would argue one of the reasons why you have so much being written, for example, on the about the life of Jesus, is the eyewitnesses wanted to write while there were eyewitnesses who would substantiate what they wrote. So it's not so much that they were just going to die and so they needed to write this down, but they actually wanted it to, written down while there were other people still alive that that could substantiate it. And that's an argument Richard Balcom and others have put forward.
By what time, again, accounting for the outliers like the book of Revelation that may come later,
yeah.
By what time do we have, say, the four Gospels circulating together, as you said they did? And by what time do we have Paul's epistles, some evidence for them being in circulation, the epistles of the other apostles and New Testament authors?
Well, what we have as a canon, you don't really necessarily have a listing of a canon that we, Muratorian canon in the second century, is kind of the earliest listing together. But what we would guess is that already at a very early stage in the first century, congregations were sharing letters, because we have evidence of letters being copied, sent to other congregations. There's, you know, there's distribution of letters in a wide way. So the probability is that you have Gospels being read and copied together, Paul's epistles being read and copied together, and then gradually you have this joining together of the four Gospels, the epistles of Paul, and, you know, the Catholic epistles, and even the book of Revelation, probably in a fairly complete way in the second century already. And certainly in the late second century and third century, you have these things all circulating even before there's a formal announcement of the New Testament canon in the fourth century. People should not think that just because Athanasius says, you know, here's the books that are in the New Testament canon, that there wasn't a New Testament canon until he specifies what the New Testament, what's authoritative for the church. The church was already doing that in by the late 1st and early 2nd century, namely circulating these important gospels and epistles together, reading them in churches alongside the Old Testament, so they were seen as having the same inspired divine authority as the sacred writings of the Old Testament.
So let's clarify with a few questions here.
Yeah.
Just because we don't have, as you mentioned earlier in our conversation, autographs, that is, the very ink on the very paper that Paul himself either used or through dictation someone else wrote, just because we don't have those documents, is that a reason to call into question what we do have, the manuscripts?
Right. No, it's because we don't have a copy of Homer. We don't dispute that he wrote the Iliad and the Odyssey and that we have some kind of trustworthy testimony to what he wrote. One can say that there's more testimony to what to the manuscripts of the New Testament than any other first century documents, because it's been copied so much and distributed so widely in the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, 4th century, those early centuries. And once you hit the 4th century, where Christianity is more of embraced in terms of the wider state, the Roman Empire, then you have formal copying being made, in the sense of Christian centers become centers for distributing copies of the scriptures. But until that time, you still had a lot of activity between congregations of getting copies of the Gospels, the Epistles, the books that make up the New Testament, so that people could use them in their teaching and their proclamation and their reading of the scriptures on the Lord's Day. And so once these things go out, as I said before, it's like hitting the send button. They then go out and they start circulating. And they don't get, they can't be all recalled, all changed. So what we have now, in the sense of the manuscripts from 2nd, 3rd, 4th century, are absolutely great, trustworthy testimony to the text that would have been written by the evangelist, by Paul, in the 1st century.
You, with only 30 seconds here, you say, this isn't a simple story to tell, but it doesn't pull us away from the authenticity of the writings themselves. What do you mean by that with only 30 seconds?
It's God works through human beings to get this message out. So there's a historical nature to it, namely people like Matthew wrote. There were other people that copied. There's other people that distributed these. It just shows how God works to make sure that his revelation is passed on from generation to generation. Now we have Xerox machines, and we can copy with perfect without any errors or changes in the sense of printing presses and other things. But back then, we still had a way that God worked to bring his message to other people.
Dr. Charles Geeshan is Academic Dean and Professor of New Testament at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. He's authored an article for the latest For the Life of the World magazine titled, How Did We Get the New Testament? He also serves there at Concordia Theological Seminary, where they are training a great crop of pastors every year, forming, training, educating in the basics of the New Testament and the Old to be able to rightly handle the Word of God. You can find out more about Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. Visit them on the web, ctsfw.edu, ctsfw.edu, or give them a call, 1-800-481-2155, 1-800-481-2155. Dr. Geeshan, thanks for being our guest.
You're very welcome.
When we come back, we're going to talk with Chris Roseborough. We're doing a weekly roundup with him every week now, every Friday, on Pop American Christianity. We'll get an update on Mark Driscoll and his former church, Mars Hill. Hillsong Church, the big church in Australia that has satellites all over the globe. Well, at least the Australian satellite is refusing to take a clear stand on homosexuality. And we'll talk about a pastor restored to the ministry 4 weeks after being arrested for DUI. All of that with Chris Roseborough, plus Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week in Hour 2 of Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.